Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is the second episode of our 12 days of the Comic Source. So it's day number two here on our countdown to Christmas. So that means you're getting two episodes today for your listening pleasure. And I thought, since normally on Tuesdays we do X Tuesdays, I thought it would be a great time to take a look at the Merry X-Men Holiday Special from 2019. This was a very ambitious project from editors Jordan D. White, who's the head X-Men editor. He got an assist by Annalise Bissa and Chris Robinson. And as I said, a very ambitious project because it's 30 pages and you basically have everything is a one-page story. Basically, you have a few... Kind of a bracketed or framework story with Jubilee that shows up a few times. But for the most part, every story is kind of its own thing, its own sort of just one page quick X-Men holiday story. So other than the letterer, which stays the same for all of them, it's Travis Lanham, the rest of the creative team changes for the most part on every single page. So as I said, it does start off on December 1st and moves through the 25th, Christmas Day, which is more than just a one-page story to kind of wrap it up. So I'll give the creative teams as we go along for each of these particular issues. So December 1st, Jubilee, the script is by Chris Sims, and Chad Bowers. Art is by Marco Faia, colors by Israel Silva. And it's basically Jubilee with her her son, Shogo. And she's talking about finally being able to take a month vacation. She's got a full month off. She planned on going to Hawaii. So she's in her closet. She's looking for her bathing suit, which she hasn't worn in a really long time because you can't really sunbathe when you're a vampire. And she makes a comment about that. And we get a little editorial note that that's a really long story. And while she's digging through her closet, she actually comes across this little Nightcrawler doll that she tosses behind her that the baby gets. And, when she notices that Shogo has it, she says, "Hey, that's Ileana's old doll. I didn't even realize I tossed it out here." Well, that's great because I guess that there's your Christmas present, right? It's already sorted out. So she's like, "All right, come on, ride's here. Let's go see if Santa comes to the beach on a surfboard in Hawaii or not." And so she grabs her suitcase, she grabs the baby carrier, and she's out the gates of the X mansion there. And all of a sudden we see a flying. And it looks like this giant, kind of like a, I don't even know what to call it, a thing that normally would pick up garbage, right? Like a big truck that has a thing that kind of comes over from behind and it just slams down on top of her and apparently scoops her and Shogo up. On the next page, we have a Kitty Pryde story, December 2nd, titled Never Again. Script is by Chris Claremont. The art is by Terry and Rachel Dodson, with colors by Chris Sotomayor. And this is just a one-page splash with some text. And it's basically Kitty celebrating Hanukkah. We know Kitty Pryde has always been Jewish in the Marvel Universe. And so she's saying the traditional prayers in Hebrew, and it's translated for us. And meanwhile, she's doing this on Genosha, and she's thinking about the 12 million people that lived there and then died there when the Mega Sentinel got wiped out, and the fact that one of them was their dad, and all that's left is those people are ghosts, and you know, their lives, their dreams, all of their all of that was stolen from them by hate, you know, the hate of that people have for mutants. And she's Kate Pryde, as she calls herself now, leader of the X-Men. And she feels like she hasn't been doing enough. She's been kind of on the sidelines. She saved the planet from destruction several times, but she doesn't feel like she's been making a real difference. And so on Hanukkah, on this special night that means so much to her, in the name of the people who died there, she says she's going to run for president and win and bring a brighter future. She's making that promise to her dad as she lights the candles of the menorah. So I don't know that anything ever came from this. Maybe something was planned. Maybe Chris Claremont had some idea. But I think with Jonathan Hickman taking over the X-Men, it's gone by the wayside. At least I think it has. If I'm wrong about that and somebody out there know something with Kitty running for president, then certainly let me know. It would be an interesting storyline for sure. All right, moving on to the next story here, December 3rd, Wolverine and Hot Claws for Hanukkah. Again, a Hanukkah story. It's written by Charles Soule. You know, he's the one that brought Wolverine back and brought us the Hot Claws. The art is by Ryan Brown, who Charles Soule often collaborates with on his creator-owned projects, like most recently Curse Words. And the colors are by Jordan Boyd. So we see a Jewish family. We see their menorah in the window. The dad's out there trying to shovel the walk and the driveway because apparently the woman's, his wife, her parents are coming over for dinner and the store's closed in an hour and they don't have anything to serve their parents. They don't have the gifts. And this guy's like out there trying to shovel snow and he's wondering if he's ever going to be able to get it done in time. You know, you certainly never want to let down your in-laws. And then all of a sudden in the distance, he hears a big roar and he's like, what the heck? And here comes a couple of ninjas running through his yard, being chased by Wolverine, who has those hot claws popped. And the guy's like, holy crow. And his wife's saying, wait, who was that? And their young son says, well, it looked like Wolverine's, but Wolverine's claws don't get hot like that, do they? And the dad says, well, they do now. If you ask me, those hot claws just saved Hanukkah because basically the heat of those claws just cleared the guy's walk and cleared the driveway. And he's and took a lot of melted a lot of the snow off the car for that matter as well. So he's going to be able to drive in and get some food so they can make have a nice Hanukkah dinner and make sure that he impresses the in-laws. So hashtag hot claws at the end of that story. Pretty fun. Moving on to December 4th, Jean Grey and Dreaming of a Wade Christmas. It's written by Jean Grey, but the Jean is, or the Grey rather, spelled G-R-A-E. And the art is by Sean Crystal. The color is by Rico Renzi. So I don't know if that Jean Grey, G-R-A-E, is actually a real person or just a pseudonym from somebody else. It's probably my least favorite story in the whole book. You know, I'm not a big Deadpool fan. And it doesn't really make that much sense. Basically, Jean Grey and Deadpool are hallucinating that they're some sort of couple and have spent many Christmases together. And Jean keeps realizing it and kind of pulling them out. And Deadpool's like, it's Christmas. Let's just enjoy it. You know, crazy is kind of on brand for me. And when was your last, you know, when was your last nice Christmas? You know, this might be an alternate reality death trap, but, you know, maybe we could just enjoy it and not feel alone all the time. And so Jean kind of agrees to go along and Jean's like, I'm already regretting this. And Deadpool's asking her a bunch of crazy questions like, do you think Magneto has a hard time decorating his tree? So the last panel is an African-American girl who's playing in a dollhouse and she is holding a Deadpool doll and there's a Jean Grey doll in the house as well. So I'm taking that to mean that this whole story is some fantasy she's creating in her mind of Deadpool and Jean Grey celebrating Christmas. But I'm not familiar with who that mutant is because it says Jean Grey in Dreaming of a Wade Christmas, not whoever that that young girl mutant is. So somebody who's more familiar with the X-Men may understand it better than me, but I didn't know who it was. So anyway, moving on to December 5th, another real short one here. It's by Zach Thompson and Lonnie Nadler. The art and color by Emma Claire Pina. It's Nature Girl and I Hate Christmas. And she's watching Colossus cut down a Christmas tree and she's thinking, I hate Christmas, I always have. She's watching Colossus put that Christmas tree up in the X-Men's mansion or school and everybody trimming the tree. And she's thinking about how this is the time of year we're supposed to focus on how it brings people together. Everybody talks about the warmth despite the cold weather and the spirit of giving. And so many people say they don't like the plastic trees. They don't feel authentic. But the funny thing to me is everything about this holiday feels plastic and nobody likes to think about what the harm that they do, what they're taking away, and nobody cares to listen. And when she talks about listening, she's talking about the trees, right? Because she's Nature Girl. She says, if you know, nature will tell you a different story about the holidays. It's a different kind of chill and a different kind of giving. Trees are giving their lives, families being torn apart. Again, families of trees. So she's like, yeah, I have a reason I hate Christmas, because all I hear are the screams of slowly dying trees. So something to think about, kind of goes sort of hand in hand with what I talked about on day one of the 12 days of Christmas, when I was talking about that Captain Ultra story and planting a tree to replace the one that you you cut down. Something to think about. One other thing that I wanted to correct, actually, I should have done this before I started going through these one-page stories in X-Men, is I think I said Chris Claremont wrote Giant Size X-Men 1. Obviously, Len Wein had a total brain fart. Don't know why I thought it was Chris Claremont. But anyway, Len Wein wrote Giant Size X-Men and was the one that created them along with Dave Cockrum, and then Claremont came in later. So just wanted to clarify that. All right, moving on to December 6th. This is the first time we get another look at Jubilee and Shogo, her baby. So this is the one storyline that does sort of continue on. It's more than just a one page. And so it says, on December 6th, Jubilee remembered her training. Shogo wakes her up. Apparently, they're in this mall, and they've set up a tent. And she says, oh, you're up early. Guess you're hungry. You probably should look for some breakfast. And, you know, yeah, I hear you, Shogo. Maybe we can go to, you know, Little Caesars. It's a pretzel place. And Shogo says, bun. She's sitting a bun again? Seriously? Well, you know, under normal circumstances, I would, as a mom, I'd have to say no to all that sugar. But this is anything but normal, you know? The fact that we're trapped in this mall doesn't exactly make me feel like I'm, you know, mom of the year. But they're trapped in a giant mall, like a three-story mall, you know, Bed Bath & Beyond, and build a workshop. And yeah, she's not sure why, and we're not sure why or who has her trapped in this mall. So as she's heading to Cinnabon, it starts snowing inside the mall. She's wondering what the So we move on to the next story, December 7th, Gambit, the Chike Who Stole Christmas. The script is by Styles P. and Poobs. Art is by Luciano Vecchio, and colors by Carlos Lopez. And it's Times Square. And we see Remy there, Gambit, and he's doing three card Monty for people. And one of the kids walks up and he says, hey, you want to play? You can win some money, buy some presents. And the kid says, what's the point? This mutant-hating billionaire Boris Chiche bought every Wolverine toy in the city and locked them all in the sub-basement of Chiche Industries. So what good is the, you know, any money going to do me? And he says, Boris Chiche, huh? I give you my word, everyone's getting a present this year. And later that night, we see that although Chiche Industries may be heavily guarded, there isn't a room in the world that's been built that can keep out Remy LeBeau. Moving on to December 8th, White Elephant, starring Iceman, written by Cena Grace, art by Corey Smith, color art by Jordan Boyd. Absolutely love the art on this one. And it's just fun. It's White Elephant. If you don't know, the way it works is everybody brings a gift, and then you put it on a table. First person goes, they pick up a gift, they open it, and they keep it. But subsequently after that, anybody who opens a gift can either open their gift, see what it is, and then trade it for something else, or they can trade and take a gift that somebody else already has, and then they go. So you don't know what you're going to end up with. And, you know, usually you set a price limit. And so this is the X-Men version of that. And it's just the X-Men having a bunch of fun. And we get some highlights 4 or 5 hours later, the highlights, and we see a Chia Pet, a dyed X-Men logo shirt, and other gifts. And at the end, Bobby says, you've all given me the best gift of all. This took so long, I missed the last train out to see my folks. So I guess the Long Island train was going to have to wait until tomorrow. December 9th, it's Magneto in The Impossible Enemy, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Roland Boshi, colors by Dan Brown. Warsaw, a couple of kids there, and they see Magneto, who saved them from some kind of robot that was attacking them, I guess. And they say, you're Magneto. And I said, yes, come with me and I can offer you sanctuary. I can teach you to protect yourselves. And as they're following Magneto, they say, look, the menorahs, even in the ruins, someone has lit them. Look at all of them. And Magneto talks about what a pointless gesture it is after all this time. What is there to celebrate or remember? You know, for mutants, it's just an ongoing struggle. And these kids say, no, Magneto, you're wrong. You know, you got to think about what Hanukkah represents, that a small group of people faced an impossible enemy. And even though they were outnumbered and they didn't stand a chance, they drove the enemy from their land. And when the battle was done, the holy temple was reclaimed. And Magneto says, yes, I know the stories, and maybe you're right. Especially now, it's important to remember the miracles of the past. So I thought that was a good story. Again, you know, it's one page, it's very short, but these kids reminding Magneto, who's you know, become cynical and jaded over the years, about how important symbols are and remembering miracles of the past. December 10th is Storm and Christmas Jeer, written by Charlemagne the God, art by Aletha E. Martinez, colors by J. David Ramos. And Storm is listening to apparently a podcast that says, Michelle Obama says, when they go low, we go high. But Charlemagne the God says, when they go low, sometimes you got to take it to the floor with them. And as she gets out of her car to do some shopping, Storm is thinking about that, thinking about how petty that is. She's like, that's exactly how you get cold in your stocking. And she's thinking about how, why did she choose to spend the holidays in New York instead of Amazon or Wakanda where it's warm. And as she's putting away her little earbuds in her purse, she actually bumps into somebody and she saw, you know, I'm sorry. And the guy, clearly a bigot, it's like, oh, you're that mutant lady that was married to that king from that other country. And Storm thinks, oh, one of these humans against mutant crazies. And she says, the country you're referring to is called Wakanda, and my name is not Mutant Lady, it's Aurora. And he said, oh yeah, Aurora, that's what I leave out for Santa along with some milk and cookies. I mean, the guy's just a total jerk. And she says, aren't you a little old to believe in Santa Claus? Not to mention your enemy energy tells me you wouldn't make his nice list. She says, oh, how terrible, how naughty you are. Of course you wouldn't believe in Santa Claus because he doesn't visit Jean jokes. And that just brings to mind what Storm just heard. When they go low, sometimes you got to take it to the floor with them. So rather than take the high road or walk away, she summons a little storm and a little lightning that zaps his hat, sets his hat on fire. And he runs off with a little rain cloud over his head. And Storm picks his hat up off the ground, tosses it in the trash can. Singing to herself, Santa Claus is coming to town. She knows if you've been bad or good, so be good for goodness sake. So I got to say, he totally deserved it. There's a few people out there right now that are closed-minded and bigoted that I wish I could do something similar to, for sure. Even in this holiday spirit, maybe knock some sense into them. Anyway, moving on to December 11th, we're back with Jubilee and Shogo in Deck the Malls. Once again, written by Chris Sims and Chad Bowers, art by Marco Villa, colors by Israel Silva. And Shogo is in a shopping cart and she's kind of pushing him. Somebody's chasing her. She's throwing fireworks back behind her. And she's thinking, nothing. You know, that was the Hollywood Mall, nothing like this place. The place is awesome, except for all the security. And I don't know what these guys want, but just keep your eyes on me, Shogo, eyes on me, and I'll protect you. And as she's pushing and running away, we see a different point of view from behind her. We can see who's chasing her, and we see Mr. Fantastic. We see Spider-Man. We see The Thing. We see Hulk, Captain America, Wolverine. Iron Man, but they're all automatons. They're robots of these, and they're all yelling, mine, 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 mine. And as they're fleeing these robots, Shogo accidentally drops his little Nightcrawler doll, and they can't stop to grab it, even though he's crying for it. And Jubilee tells him, we'll get it back, kid, I swear. Moving on to December 12th, it's Dr. Nemesis in The Giving Season. It's a beast story. Script is by Christopher Daniels. Art is by Ray Anthony Height and LeBeau Underwood. Colors by J. David Ramos. And Beast is thinking about how he's going to give Dr. Rao a present, something that she absolutely loves. It's all 8 episodes of Star Wars fully remastered, and he's thinking about what he's going to say when he gives it to her. And as he's holding the present in his hand and going over what he's going to say in his head, Dr. Rao Kavita comes running in saying, Henry, you're not going to believe it. I just got the greatest gift from James, you know, that being Dr. Nemesis. He sent me an original script from The Last Jedi, and it's autographed by Mark Hamill and Daisy Ridley. I can't believe it. It's the best gift ever. I have to tell Kitty. And Beast is just forlorn. He immediately calls Dr. Nemesis, and he said, "When I asked you for suggestions on what I could get for Dr. Rao, you told me how much he was into Star Wars. Did it ever occur to you that any Star Wars gift might as well be garbage compared to the gift that you got her? I may as well have given her used tissues. You conniving lout. You know, this is why they didn't invite you to our New Year's poker game for years. I can't believe you would stoop to such chicanery and duplicitousness. Fine, I'll see you at poker. Bring dip, jerk," and he hangs up. And Dr. Nemesis thinks, well, well, it is better to give than receive. So it's a real funny one, kind of showing Beast's playful side and how, despite his genius, there are things he's not good at, like relationships. The other thing that's interesting is the fact that they can make these direct references to Star Wars and Mark Hamill and Daisy Ridley and stuff, because Marvel's owned by Disney, just like Star Wars is. So it's kind of funny. Moving on to December 13th, Rogue and Gambit in Christmas Catastrophe, emphasis on cat, script by Kelly Thompson, art by David Lopez, colored by Chris Sotomayor. And basically, these two are married at this point, and they need to give their cat some medicine, and apparently their cat outsmarts them every time. And so they're planning what they're going to do. Rogue says, well, let's try not to wreck so much of the furniture this time. He says, okay, Oliver, buddy, let's do this nice and easy. Go, go, go. And they try to use their powers. They try to cut them off. And they end up on the ground under the tree with the cat having taken none of the medicine. And as Gambit says, he wins again. Rogue says, yeah, but at least this time we didn't eat any of the medicine. So they failed. Once again, they were defeated by the cat. So nice sort of domestic story, little slice of domestic life for Rogue and Gambit from Kelly Thompson. On the next one, it's Old Man Logan, December 14th, The Gift That Keeps on Giving, script art and color all by Chip Zdarsky. And Old Man Logan is out cutting firewood when Nightcrawler walks out there. And he said, I wondered why all the mansion's firewood is always dish-shaped, because he's basically just, you know, hacking the tree down. You know, he doesn't chop it down. He just, you know, starts from the top and just hacks it into rounds. And Logan really wants to be left alone. He says, I'm kind of busy here. And Nightcrawler says, you know, you're always busy these days. And I know Christmas is still a few days away, but you've been more distant than usual. And I wanted to remind you of some of the important things in life, like the way you once did for me. And way back in King Size X-Men Annual 1, or King Size X-Men Annual Volume 1, Number 4, when Wolverine gave Nightcrawler a picture of himself. And it was just kind of a funny joke. And so what Nightcrawler has brought Logan is a picture of Nightcrawler, a picture of himself. He's kind of returning the favor. And he tells Old Man Logan as he teleports away, Bobby's making his famous snowball special, so don't be a stranger. And as Old Man Logan's standing there, he's like, you could have teleported some of this firewood along with you, you dumb. And so that's a real fun story, because it calls back again to something that happened in the X-Men in the past. And even though this is, you know, a different version of Wolverine, you know, obviously that event from King Size Annual 4 still took place. So it's kind of fun. December 15th, Cannonball Home for the Holidays, script by Al Ewing, art by PJ Holden, color art by Antonio Fabella. I have to plead ignorance on this one. I'm not sure why Cannonball and Smasher, they appear to be on some distant planet. So I'm not sure what that's about. I'm not sure why they're on a different planet at this time. But they do say it sure is nice to be home for the holidays, but the holidays are weird here. But I mean in a good way. And Smasher, apparently they're on there on her home planet, says, you know, Earth's not the only planet with a winter solstice. People are the same all over. Universal friendship, celebrating family and peace and goodwill puts me right in the spirit. And as they're flying over, they see a glorp, I guess, which is some sort of, I don't know, alien species. Again, not that familiar. But he basically is a bah humbug. And Cannonball says, yep, you're right. Folks are the same all over. And Smasher says, happy holidays, Sam. Glorp us, everyone. So again, I'm not familiar enough with the context of the story here to say one way or the other, but the art's pretty good. So say that. December 16th, Domino in the Naughty List, art, script, and color by Anthony Piper. And basically we have Domino thinking about the holidays and how she can find them to be therapeutic, because she spends so much of her time during the year killing really bad people for large sums of money. She usually doesn't get a chance to give back to society. And she's there to kill somebody, though, even as she says that. And it's some drunk jerk in a Santa hat who's chasing after some girl at the office party. And apparently he's a millionaire. He's about to close a deal worth $120 million. But apparently that deal is from trafficking humans. So as he catches up to the girl and holds some mistletoe over her head and talks about how lucky the girl is going to be to kiss him, Domino shoots him through the head and thinks to herself, like I said, the holiday time is therapeutic, and it ends. So I really like that story. It sums up Domino pretty well. And the color work is spectacular, and it's done really good. The Braddocks for December 17th, Baby Steps, script by Leah Williams, art by Marcio Takara, colors by Chris O'Halloran. We know Betsy in this time period of the X-Men universe had just returned to life. And basically, this is her and her brother Brian Braddock, know him better as Captain Britain, getting to see each other for the first time now that she's back. So it's a touching story. She's there at the home with his wife and his daughter, and Brian comes home and gets to see her, and they embrace. Next up, December 18th, it's Glob Herman and Deck the Halls, and it's very appropriately named. It's Ed Brisson on script, art by Pierre Perez, and colors by Chris Sotomayor. There's not any dialogue in this one. The only words are whack, whack, whack from the hammer and nails that Glob is using to literally deck the halls. He's decking the halls of the X mansion with some evergreen garland, and then sitting down to enjoy his handiwork. So very festive, that one. December 19th, Gabby Kinney in Secret Santa. So for those not familiar, Gabby Kinney is Honey Badger. She's another clone of Wolverine, sort of. She's cloned from X-23, and she's getting a Secret Santa gift, which is a $100 gift card to Steaks and Cakes. And she's super excited, and she runs off after X-23 gives it to her. And X-23 says, where are you going? She's like, I got to thank my Secret Santa. I'll be back soon. So we get a little montage on the bottom half of the page with her going around to various X-Men, wondering if it's them. Storm says, I didn't even know there was a place where you could get steaks and cakes. And Bishop says, you can order steaks and pie and get them in your stomach at the same time. That sounds like a stomach ache waiting to happen. And Gabby says, well, it's a good thing it's cake, huh? Bobby says, it's sweet that she thinks it might be him, but he doesn't even have $100. And Kitty asks her, well, who did it smell like? And that's when she realizes that it smelled like sisters. And she runs off and gives one of the cuckoos, Mindy, a big hug. And Mindy tells her, Merry Christmas. December 20th, we return to the mall. Jubilee, All I Want for Christmas. Once again, Chris Sims and Chad Bowers writing, art by Marco Faia, colors by Israel Silva. And Jubilee has managed to find some rollerblades to basically zoom around the mall and keep her and Shogo safe. And with everybody who's attacking her, she's managed to keep her and Shogo safe. And at the last moment, even manages to grab the Banff doll, the Nightcrawler doll, back, give it back to Shogo and say, see, I told you we'd get it back. December 21st, it's Hope Summers and The Longest Night. Script by Tinney Howard, art by Brent Schoonover, colors by Chris O'Halloran. And it's Bobby Drake's first annual Winter Solstice Party. And Hope Summers has been sitting in the corner by herself all night, and Bobby's not having it. He goes over saying, Hope, you've been in this corner the whole evening all by yourself. It's unacceptable. It's the longest night of the year, and that means we have more time to party. You need to cheer up. And he grabs her phone from her. She says, Bobby, I was watching that. And what she's watching is a video of Cable, you know, her surrogate father, the person who raised her. And in this video that she's watching, Cable's saying, We're going to have to stay up all night if we want to get out of here without being jumped, and it's going to be a long night. But I used to hear that that's what they did back in the day, was stay up all night for the longest nights, because after being up for that long, when you see the sun in the morning, that means you've got hope again. And apparently when this went down, he actually already had Hope Summers. We see her strapped to his chest there just as a little tiny baby. So they're all remembering Cable and the sacrifices that he made for Hope Summers. So it's a pretty poignant story. December 22nd, we're back to Hank McCoy. It's Blue Christmas, script by Rainbow Rowell, art by Chris Anka, colors by Matthew Wilson. And Beast is back in his old room, the room he grew up in when he was just Hank McCoy. And he's overhearing his parents talk downstairs. One saying, he looks good, doesn't he? And they're like, he looks different. But he looks healthy. Yeah, but he comes home every time and he's like a different person. You know, it's just so weird. Like, he's never the same person twice. He used to have the little kitty nose and now it's gone. And sometimes he has fur and sometimes not. And you know, I hate that he comes home alone every time. You think that he would finally find somebody. I worry that he's all alone. Another one says, well, he's got his ex people. He's not alone completely. And the other parent replies, yeah, it's not the same. You know, I just thought we'd have grandchildren by now. And his dad responds, furry blue ones. And his wife, Norton, like, don't say that. And then they call up louder, Hank, honey, hurry up. We'll be late for church. And he says he's coming. So, yeah, it's kind of tough for Beast at times. You know, we had the other one where he, you know, his gift sort of got ruined for the girl that he liked. And just another reminder here that he is sort of alone. He is sort of a tragic figure in the X universe. December 23rd, we got Nightcrawler in And to All a Good Nightcrawler. Script is by Seamus Ryan, art by Michael Shelfer, colors by Frederico Blee. And we see a couple of kids sitting outside Cockrum and Ween's Toys, and they're talking about this rumor they heard that Magneto pulled the whole sleigh and reindeer down, but they can't seem to find any video of it online, so maybe it didn't happen, when all of a sudden Nightcrawler appears, and Nightcrawler's like, it's pretty late for you guys to be out. Shouldn't you be home by now? And they said, nah, we're here because we don't think Santa got our letters, and we're trying to, and Nightcrawler says, break in? You're not trying to break into this toy store, are you? And he said, because I'm sure Santa received your letters, and you know, you shouldn't break into to stores. They said, no, we weren't gonna break in. We just we wanted to be here super early, like waiting for them to open up. And Nightcrawler says, well, it's late, and I think you should get home, and you know, worry about it at another time. And the kids they want to know if Nightcrawler can confirm the story about Magneto and the sleigh. And he's like, no, I can't. And you know, again, tells them they need to go home. And one of the kids says, you sound like my dad, Nightcrawler. Do you have any kids? And he responds in German, nine. They say, nine kids? Whoa. He's like, no. I have no children, but I do have elves. And they'll be disappointed if you don't get home right now. And we see all his little Nightcrawler teleporting elves kind of bamf in, and they're all dressed like elves. So this one's fun, and the art by Michael Shelfer is where it really shines. We're on up to Christmas Eve now, December 24th, Jamie Madrox in The Gift of the Madry, instead of The Gift of the Magi, that famous O. Henry story. This one's written by Matthew Rosenberg. The art is by Andy McDonald. Colors by Tamara Bonvillain. And this is my favorite story in the whole one-page stories here. It's so fun. And basically what happens is Remy LeBeau gives Jamie a present. He got Jamie as his secret Santa. And he says, okay, Jamie, it's Christmas Eve, but I'm going to be out of town tonight, so I'm giving you the present early. And Madrox opens it up, and it's a pocket watch. He says, what is this? It's nice, but what is it? And Jamie says, it's a one-of-a-kind piece. It's Winston Churchill's pocket watch. It was given to him by his father. If anyone asks you, you tell him it's a fake, that it's replica, but it's not. It's the real one. And Jamie's like, wow, that's awesome. I completely forgot to even check who I got in Secret Santa this year. And he says, well, we actually stopped doing Secret Santa 2 years ago because the cuckoo's always ruined it. Now we just get gifts for everyone, and this is what I got for you. And Jamie's like, wait, what? There's like 230 X-Men now. I got to go get gifts for all of them. Isn't even there a guy named Gold Balls now? And Remy's, as he's walking out, says, don't worry so much about it. You'll figure it out. And remember, if Interpol asks, you've never seen that watch before. And Jamie's like, oh man, how hard is it going to be to remember to go shopping for 230 people? God, I'm such an idiot. And he smacks himself on the forehead. And, you know, of course, when multiple man smacks himself, what happens? He duplicates himself. So now we see two Jamies there, and they're each holding a pocket watch. And the Jamie Prime gets an idea, says, oh. And the duplicate says, Jamie, no. But sure enough, the next day, Christmas morning, we see Storm come walking into the room where all the other X-Men are. And she says, wow, you're not going to believe what Jamie got me. He's so sweet. He put so much thought into it. As she's holding the pocket watch. And as she walks into the room, we see Dazzler, we see Rogue, we see Old Man Logan, and we see all of them have a pocket watch in their hands. And Storm says, that son of a... So pretty funny. That, like I said, that one made me laugh out loud. Here it is, this one-of-a-kind Winston Churchill pocket watch, and Jamie managed to make it worthless by giving it to everybody. Now we're up to Christmas, December 25th. This one stars Arcade, Walking in a Winter Murderland. It's by Chris Sims, Chad Bowers, art by Marco Faia, colors by Israel Silva, which is that same creative team that have been giving us the Jubilee story all along. And he's asking his clients, so do you love it? And then they're like, I don't know what to say. Another says, are you completely mad? We hired you to design a fully immersive mall for families as a way to enhance their shopping experience and make them send money. And you come back with this. And he's like, mad? This is what you asked for. And one of the women says, we don't want you to kill our customers. That would be bad for business. You've built this place. And Arcade says, murder mall. It's like, no one can survive a murder mall. It's right there in the title. It's like, no, that's where you're wrong. I already beta tested it for the last couple of weeks. I brought this girl in there with her kid, and they survived. And the girl's like, wait, you put a kid in that dress trap? He's like, look, you're missing the point. All across America, malls are dying. They're leaving their giant sprawling corpses, you know, laying around. And your murder mall is a chance to cash in. It's an escape room and a Black Friday sale all in one. Customers will be lining up to, you know, take on these deadly traps and highly sought after consumer goods. And it's the key to jumpstarting the economy again. You're going to do great. She's like, look, or he says, look, and he shows some video of Jubilee fighting against some of the traps. And they say, look at the lengths a mother will go to retrieve a doll that her kid lost. Imagine if that was an ultra limited edition Stark phone. And one of the guys, Arcade's clients, is like, isn't that one of the X-Men? I said, yeah, but it's the weakest of the X-Men. And if she can survive for weeks, then anybody can survive. And right then we see Jubilee and Shogo smash through the wall, and she's like, Merry Christmas, you filthy animal, and knocks him out. And right at that moment, Storm and Nightcrawler show up to rescue her. And she's like, hey, guys, you're a little late. It's like, oh, we've been searching for you for so long. Once we realized you didn't make it to Hawaii. And it turns out one of those people that Arcade was hired to is the one that called. Said, hey, I called them, the numbers on the school website. My daughter's a fan. And now they're going to, Shogo and Jubilee are really going to celebrate Christmas. But she is fine. She says, I've had a better month, but I think I'm done with Christmas for a while. So she asked Kurt, do you think you could teleport us over to Oahu for New Year's? And it ends with a happy holidays, everyone, asterisk. And the asterisk is for except Arcade. So that finishes up the X-Men holiday special. Like I said, it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work for Jordan D. White and the rest of the editorial team. So kudos to them for pulling it off. I remember hearing about them getting the ball rolling, and they were giving hints about what it was going to be. And they were worried, are we going to be able to get enough people? And then they ended up having like so many people interested in doing these one-page stories that they ended up having to turn people away. So I think if we hadn't had a pandemic this year, they might have done a sequel or an encore of something like this. But it is really fun. And I think where Jordan D. White was worried is it's kind of hard to do one-page stories. I mean, obviously, the Jubilee story, Chris Sims and Chad Bowers, they got to tell a little bit of a longer story, probably got, you know, maybe 8 pages total, 6 pages total. It's a little bit different for them. But everybody else, it's just one page. And that can be challenging. But it's also fun. So I'd love to see more of these in the future with even different characters. Even if it's the same character, like I think Spider-Man or Captain America, Avengers one would be good. Iron Man, I think they would be a lot of fun. Obviously, X-Men, it suits them particularly well because there are so many, you know, like Jamie Madrox said, 230 of them. And you have so many creators that are familiar with the X-Men. But like I said, for me, that Jamie Madrox story with him duplicating Winston Churchill's watch, that I laughed out loud the first time that I read it. That was a really favorite. For me, from Matthew Rosenberg. But all in all, if you love the X-Men, this is a great holiday special, a great way to just get some holiday cheer and some fun X-Men stories. Get to see a little more of the domestic side of the X-Men, as it were. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Comic Source Podcast, the second one for your 12 days of the Comic Source. As always, I want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.